Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of Telekinesis. I'm Daniel Raskin, CMO at Kinetica and co-host of Telekinesis, and I'm here with my co-host and producer, Mark Johnson.
Hey, how's it going, Daniel?
Good. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing good, doing good. Really excited for today's episode. We got a great guest for everybody.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So far, we've had some wonderful episodes. We've had, NVIDIA joining us. We've had folks from StreamSets. And now we have Nick Taylor from Google. Nick, welcome.
Thank you, Daniel. Excited to be here.
Yeah, do you want to give the world a little intro on what you do at Google?
Sure. So I'm a consultant in the Google Cloud Professional Services team. So I work with some of the largest customers of Google Cloud, helping them understand how best to adopt the cloud, how to transform their businesses rather than just kind of lift and shift migrations. And obviously, Google's cloud is a relatively new business. And so although we have some very big customers and we underpin some of the largest businesses, there's a kind of perception that Google Cloud is pretty new in the market and perhaps playing catch up to some of the other players. And so it's also a bit of my role to do things like this, to come and join podcasts, presentations, and so on, to kind of explain how we work and how businesses get the best out of our cloud and the cloud in general.
Right. And I was taking from your accent, at first I thought you might be from Brooklyn, but it sounds more like it's from the UK. Is that correct?
So
you
That's
kind of
right.
bring a UK perspective to things.
I'm based in London.
Yeah.
That's great. And just so all of our listeners know, Nick's fresh off a great vacation from Tokyo as well. How was that trip, Nick?
It was an awesome trip. I was away for 2 weeks and then I came home and moved house. So I'm both jet lagged and surrounded by boxes. So it's all a bit stressful, but otherwise good.
Got it. And you said you saw Mount Fuji. Did you see Mount Fuji or do you climb Mount Fuji? Because you know you can hike up it too.
No, I went to a theme park that was near Mount Fuji, so I got a view from a roller coaster, but no climbing.
Oh, nice. From a roller coaster.
Next best thing.
Yeah. So, Nick, a lot of our focus in telekinesis has been around the power of data and using data to transform the business. And, we have a strong perspective on it in terms of what it means to really do that. But I'm curious, with all the different customers that you're seeing and being on the ground with Google Cloud, are you seeing a lot of stuff going on in Google Cloud around data?
Yeah, and it's a very big differentiator for us. Google's been a data business for a very long time, it's a focus for us in terms of products like BigQuery and Cloud Spanner and all these kind of things that are big data warehouse, data analytics tools in Google. But it's a trend that we've seen for a while where whether it's a retail business capturing data about transactions, an e-commerce platform capturing all the kind of clicks and views of a person, or things like IoT, everything is just generating more and more and more data. And now with storage and processing being relatively cheap, basically every organization is saying, well, let's try and capture all the data and keep everything because one day we might analyze it, which is a very different world from where we were a few years ago. So tools like yours and ours, are really important in kind of that growth around data and how to manage it.
Yeah, you actually just hit on a really important point, which is one of the things around IoT is the fact that you have a lot more streaming data and the types of data you need to collect is different than the old batch, processing of data. What are you guys seeing around IoT and the whole piece about just unpredictable data sources that are spewing up?
I think it's a kind of rapidly growing business, right? We see all sorts of organizations with IoT style devices, and there are so many flavors of IoT, right? Whether that's consumer devices, so things in my house, or it's industrial IoT, or things like smart connected cars, self-driving cars, all these kind of things. That there are just so many types of device now that are generating, hundreds of megabytes or terabytes even of data, up to that kind of scale every day, every second of every day. And you know, there's a couple of challenges there, right? One is what you do to capture that data, and then what kind of tools do you have that meaningfully analyze those things? So, you know, is it a plane flying through the sky where, you know, you're capturing all the telematics of every little component to say, well, when's this component going to fail? And, you know, in Google's world, we then focus on things like machine learning to interpret that data. But that only works really now that people can put their data in the cloud, because individual organizations just don't have the scale to be able to deal with those things.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of great points to double click on there. I mean, one is you guys have the whole Google GPU cloud that's launching, or it's been out there for a while, but the whole idea that you can do massive parallel compute now, and you don't necessarily have to just buy, you know, hardware to deploy on-prem, you can actually leverage GPUs through Google. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the way it works is basically you can, you know, in common with any other cloud provider, you can create virtual machines. And those can be of a kind of any custom type, so depending on the type of your workload. So for GPUs, you can attach NVIDIA Tesla GPUs to those machines that you create, and you can attach kind of up to eight GPU dies to each instance, and obviously you could spin up many thousands of instances. So what that allows you to do is get the benefit of GPUs in the cloud and running workloads where it, you know, typical use cases are things like video transcoding or, you know, those kind of complex machine learning algorithms and things like that people use. So you can kind of scale those up. Also, what we do is make use of preemptible GPUs. So for batch processing jobs, in the same way as you get preemptible instances, you can attach GPUs to those, so you can do kind of like very cheap but very powerful computation by capturing kind of off-peak load of GPUs, which is a really valuable thing.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of great power in that, and I think a lot of education that has to happen across enterprises. I mean, to me, you think about a CPU, which, you know, you could have 64 cores, and then you think about a GPU where you could have 4,000 to 6,000 cores in a single GPU. And it's like the difference between lizard brain and like modern brain, right, in terms of processing. So there's some really great power there.
Yeah, indeed. And, I think it is something that it's difficult for people to get their heads around in terms of actually the compute power in GPUs. Obviously, Google goes a little bit further as well. We have custom – it's kind of like a GPU, but a custom processor for running TensorFlow for machine learning. And so there's all sorts of flavors of that kind of custom, massively parallel processing that we offer. And it really depends on the type of workload of the customer.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that sounds like, you know, a big differentiator for the Google Cloud Platform. And I think something that might be helpful, Nick, is maybe you could provide a few other kind of big differentiators between the Google Cloud Platform and some of the other major cloud vendors like your AWS and Azure.
Sure. I guess, it all starts with Google being Google, right? So Google has 7 products that each have over 1 billion users. And so Google designed its infrastructure for massive scale right from the beginning. And, you know, before Google built a cloud platform, there's been this internal infrastructure, you know, things like Kubernetes, the container engine, came from internal Google technologies. And what you're seeing now is basically this progressive open sourcing of all the innovation that happens inside of Google. So, you know, every bit of Google's infrastructure is containerized and it's scalable and it's using these technologies that you can now procure, you know, by the minute through the Google Cloud Platform. But also because of that, and because of it, things like Gmail, Google Drive, all of these things that have massively scalable databases and processing underneath, those technologies look very different to the technologies you see from Amazon or Microsoft, or indeed other providers like IBM and Oracle. So Google Cloud's platform, whilst we do have all the capabilities you see in the others for kind of core infrastructure, whether it's virtual machines or containers or, you know, standard databases like MySQL, is we then have this kind of extra layer of data-focused and machine learning-focused technologies on the top. So things like BigQuery, Cloud Spanner, Bigtable are kind of managed service data layers and kind of data analytics layers that use this kind of, you know, CPU, GPU technology underneath. And then going further than that, looking into things like machine learning, where we effectively have a managed machine learning platform. So using data that you store elsewhere in the platform, you can build machine learning models. And we're seeing massive adoption of that in combination with more traditional compute. So, you know, seeing people like retailers who've gone from, well, let's have a stock management system, to then being able to kind of do real-time analytics on what people are buying, to now going even further to saying, actually, we can predict what people might buy based on past history, based on buying trends, based on things like the weather, which have just never been possible before. So I think it's that kind of broad spectrum approach of technologies that really add value to customers in the real world more than just kind of standard transactional compute.
Yeah, so there's some interesting things there. I mean, one of the things, so I don't even know if you realize this, but we bundle TensorFlow with our product, and we're just seeing this massive uptake in terms of trying to figure out how to operationalize machine learning and get the data scientist out of the corner office. But I think the other piece that's really interesting, and I love that you start talking about examples across industries, is, you know, you're in a unique position because you know the technology so intimately, but you're also so tightly engaged to the customer use cases. And it raises the question of, you know, when you're talking about how to use data in a way to differentiate within an industry, how do you approach that so that we don't become guilty of just talking about the speeds and just the technology itself, but rather look at it from the perspective of the customer?
I think, you know, in the roles I've had in the past as well as at Google, one of my big focus areas is exactly that, is, you know, what business problem is an organization really trying to solve? What are we enabling with the technology? And actually kind of steering away from what is it about speeds and feeds. You know, if you want a virtual machine, there are a dozen providers out there who can give you one. And of course, I would say that Google's is faster or cheaper or easier to use and easier to manage. But that kind of misses the point. You know, from a perspective of mine working at Google, and it's very much a personal view, a lot of people come to Google because they want to be more Google. And without sounding arrogant about that, but inside of Google, there's a lot of power in open data. So not sensitive data, which is obviously kept very secure, but in terms of, you know, operational data, in terms of, you know, our own internal processes, all of those things are accessible to everyone. So, and there are very powerful tools for everyone to use. And so what that means is you can really transform an organization by, with appropriate access to the right data, you know, data that you need to do your job, but making that available at your fingertips. And that kind of openness is really transformative for a business. And so then you start to think about, with each business, you know, what are the scenarios that you can enable? As I say, you know, in a retailer, can we help you predict what stock should be? In a bank, how do we help you do fraud and risk analytics and spot patterns in transactions that make you be able to spot fraud far better than you ever have before? And thinking about it at that business level is very much my role as a consultant, is like, how, you know, how do we benefit your business? And then let's think about what the technology is later. And, you know, I very much come to that with a view that the technology comes second. It has to be your business solution first. And if that means I have a long conversation with you about how your business should be better, and actually the answer is, you know, some other technology, well, that's a fair conversation to be had. And obviously I would say ours is great, and as is yours. And, you know, that's been my way of working in the past too. So I think it's all about that business need and all about what resonates with the business, and technology comes later.
Yeah. Can we dig into an example of that? Because I know you've been intimately following the whole open banking movement in the UK. And so maybe could you tell our audience a little bit about what open banking is and what the implications are to banks?
Sure. So the open banking initiative in the UK is aligned to the PSD2, the Payment Services Directive 2 initiative across the whole of Europe. And basically, both of those things are trying to accomplish a very similar goal, which is to increase competition and increase access to data in the retail banking industry. So what that means is you as a consumer, your transaction data, your behavior, your history with the bank is today locked up in the back end systems of a bank. And you know, big retail banks are notoriously bad at, you know, good customer service, good apps, at good online presence, at all those things. And so PSD2 and open banking are both basically forcing the major banks to make that data accessible by API. So there's a couple of APIs. So one is around read access to your transactions, and the other is around being able to make payments. So effectively using the bank as a payments engine or as a database of your transactions and having that all accessible by API. So why is that useful? Well, what that means is I could be a little startup and I could build an app that said, I'm going to connect to all the APIs of all the major banks. And so then you as a consumer can say, well, I'm going to go to this app and in that one app see all of my banking transactions across a bunch of banks in one go. Or you could do more advanced things. I could share that data with other people. So you might be able to look at my transaction history and gain insights from that. You know, I always shop at a certain type of supermarket, or I always go to a certain type of restaurant. Maybe you want to offer me deals. And for me as a consumer, you know, there's a benefit to those things. But also what it does is effectively avoids the payment card networks, people like MasterCard and Visa, and allows me to make financial transactions directly from my bank account to a retailer and save them the fees that they would normally pay to Visa and MasterCard. So it's very powerful, and it's going to open the market to a lot more fluid financial transactions, but also a lot of kind of data analysis on the top of that.
Yeah, that's the piece that I love, is on the one hand, you can take the position of being fearful and threatened by it, or you could embrace it and recognize, okay, we're on a fair playing field around who has access to the data, but it's more about what you do with it to differentiate. And then all of a sudden, things like the perishability of data, the speed of translating data into business insight, the volume of data that you're able to ingest and consume, the ability to visualize it. I mean, there are so many implications of opportunities for using data as a way to drive core IP and differentiate.
Exactly.
And so that piece is so fascinating to me.
I agree. And I think it's a market that's really just getting started. And I think, you know, done in the right way with consent from the consumer, I imagine this kind of world where I walk into a store or online and want to make a transaction, and you know, seamlessly I can make a payment, but which bank account that comes from really depends on what's the best deal today. You know, do I need a loan to make, you know, to buy something expensive, a car or a sofa or whatever it is in some store, and you know, behind the scenes there's all these things going on, which is all this kind of analysis of where is the best financial transaction, how do I get the best deal for what I want to buy today, which with all this data kind of flowing around is a much richer thing. But it relies on, you know, open standards, relies on proper security and consent from the users, and you know, big analytics platforms that make that work in the best way.
Yeah. So, you know, one of our premises has been this idea that you know, there's all this word spaghetti out there around big data. And, mm-hmm. you know, as you look at vendors, it becomes hard to parse apart what it means in terms of the real world. So we've been kind of talking about this whole piece of, you know, there's the old world and new world, that we're in this post-big data world, and trying to really articulate what that means. And, mm-hmm. you know, from our perspective, we talk about things like the unpredictability of data sources and streaming data. We talk about how the complexity of analysis has gotten more complex.
Has drastically increased.
I was trying to say that without saying complex. The complexity of data has grown more complex. And then, you know, we also realize there's a point where the volume of data exceeds what big data systems were architected for, mm-hmm. Which is what's driving kind of this whole GPU initiative. And then you have this whole human versus machine learning world. But, mm-hmm. you know, it feels like the world's changed. And, you know, one of the challenges we have, and maybe you have this too, is with all the word spaghetti that's out there, it's very hard to kind of forge your way through the word spaghetti fog and get customers to understand, you know, what it means to future-proof around where the world is headed. So do you have any thoughts on that, or are any experiences that you're seeing in your world that reflect on that?
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a very early market. I think, you know, the world has changed a lot in this kind of in the big data world, or even beyond big data. You know, people are going beyond sort of traditional types of things like OLAP and these kind of phrases that you hear, and looking at very different ways of analyzing their data. And I think, again, it comes back to, you know, really how do you think about this from a business perspective, and focus very strongly on the solutions that you're trying to achieve and the problems that you're trying to solve, rather than speeds and feeds, as you say. So, you know, a lot of my way of thinking about this when I talk to our customers is, you know, well, imagine you can just store every bit of data for all of your transactions and, you know, for all of your events. Let's put that somewhere. And then imagine you can do analysis on that. So maybe you want a query to go back and look at specific events in the past. Maybe you want to build dashboards of statistics, or maybe you want machine learning models that read that data to build a picture for the future. And I think if you focus on those things and focus on what they do for a business, that does make it easier than, you know, this is going to run on a GPU, it's going to be a NoSQL database or a graph database or whatever else, is almost try and avoid those things. And of course, they come into the picture when you're, you know, doing kind of competitive tendering and all those kind of things. But, you know, it's let's think about what's the good solution, and we can work out what the technology solution is beyond that, is a kind of key focus point for me, I would say.
Very cool. Very cool. And Nick, so I have a question, you know, in this, so we're in this, you know, world of, you know, data that's constantly evolving. And so with that in mind, is there anything on the Google Cloud Platform roadmap that gets you particularly excited that you can share with us today?
That's a good question. I steer away from saying things about roadmap, otherwise I get in trouble. But I think that, you know, the focus for us is doubling down on machine learning and how that works in an organization, and kind of the democratization of that. So you may have seen, we have a thing called AutoML, which is basically a way to build machine learning models with almost no coding. So great examples of that are, you know, how to label images, for example. And we've seen a bunch of examples of things like this. I spoke to an insurance company, and they want to be able to build an app where you can take a picture, say you get in a car accident or something like that. You can take a photo of that, and depending on what's in the picture, the insurance company may simply just pay out automatically, because they can analyze the picture and they know, you know, well, someone crashed into your car, and this is what that claim is worth, and they pay you instantly. Or, hey, I saw a picture in a magazine of some cool trainers, some cool sneakers, and you're like, well, I really want to buy them, but I don't know what they are. Well, fine, I can take a picture of them and then instantly get, you know, a list of stores that have them in stock, and which celebrities wore them recently, and all this kind of stuff. And it's these kind of clever things where you're saying, well, how does this volume of data really, for me as a consumer, do really cool stuff, and in a way that is so lightweight and so easy for developers or organizations to use, that, you know, it's handfuls of lines of code that you can build trivially. And those things are kind of beyond the wildest dreams of, you know, technology just a few years ago, where you were worrying about how many servers to deploy in my data center, that you would just never have this level of conversation.
Right. Yeah, those answers just gave me flashbacks to all the sci-fi movies I used to watch when I was growing up.
That's right.
Cool stuff.
Hey, so Nick, I have a proposition for you.
Uh-huh.
How about tomorrow, you and I both resign from our jobs, we use AutoML to build a whole subscription business model around kittens and finding pictures of adorable kittens?
Maybe.
Ah, darn. Well, I mean, I love this conversation, and I always love hearing you talk about this stuff, because I think you bring such an awesome perspective of tech and business. So thank you so much for being our guest on Telekinesis, Data to Data Conversations. And any parting comments for our audience and our head fan club member, Jason Alfonso?
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you guys. You know, this is an area that's very exciting, and I think it's emerging. And you know, I'm very lucky to be doing that with Google. I guess it goes without saying, if you know, people are interested in Google Cloud, I'm sure they know where to find it. But yeah, thank you very much.
Cool, man. Thank you. And thus we wrap up our third episode of Telekinesis. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.